This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 1 year after the dawn of sports betting in the Commonwealth, business is booming. But Governor Healey's budget would cut a stream of funding to address gambling addiction in half. And that's as kids are finding ways around firewalls to bet online. And Massachusetts residents spend three times more on the lottery than residents in other states. It also comes, as officials note, the Commonwealth needs gambling revenues to help cover other revenue shortfalls. So today we're going to explore the tensions in gambling in the Commonwealth. Here with us, Chris Sears, who's been following the story for the Boston Globe, Evan Horowitz, who's executive director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University, Marlene Warner, who is CEO of the nonprofit Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health, and Jay Zagorski, who's an economics professor at BU's Questrom School of Business. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Evan, great to have you here in Studio 2.
Great to be here, Tiziana.
Marlene, welcome to Studio 2 for you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jay Zagorski, great to have you on the line.
Nice to be back again.
Okay, so Chris, we're going to start with you. Just a few sentences. What does Maura Healey's budget cut and from where?
Well, thank you for asking. It would essentially eliminate a one-time payment to the public trust, public health trust fund, which is an incredibly important fund. It helps to finance gambling addiction service programs all over the state, as well as vital research. And by cutting the funding, it's reducing by about $6 million the amount of money that would go into the fund, which in the future would jeopardize payments to programs across the state.
And that particular stream, Chris, comes from casino gambling revenues that are earmarked for public health, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And under the law, the fund receives 5% of the state's gambling revenues, yeah?
Correct.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. I wanted to kind of lay that out first because that's what first caught our attention. We're going to talk about that piece and then we're going to step back and look at this industry as a whole. But I want to stay there for a second. And this is where I'm going to first turn to you, Marlene Warner. You're with the Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health. When the sort of people noticed that Governor Healey had this proposal in her budget, did it cause an outcry?
I mean, it caused an outcry for people who are service providers. I think that there's still a lot of awareness that needs to be built across the state. So I wouldn't say that the general public was concerned. But I would say that, yes, you know, the folks who are doing the research, who are creating the services, who from prevention through long-term recovery are very concerned about this potential cut. And just to clarify, the Public Health Trust Fund comes from it's 5% of taxes on gross gaming revenue, not the entire revenue stream.
Right. Okay. And why? Why is this a concern?
So Massachusetts, we knew prior to the 2011 Expanded Gaming Act, even bringing casinos here, already had a significant amount of gambling problems. Legislature was smart to ask for that research to be done by UMass Amherst, their School of Public Health. And we know that we have 2% of people with severe gambling problems, and then folks at risk for a gambling problem, another 8.4%. In fact, we're awaiting data that's going to look at the impact of casinos and now sports wagering on that. But that puts us at a pretty significant level. So prior to casinos, we knew we had problems. We knew we didn't have enough money. We need more to be able to address all the people who have gained access to gambling in the last 8 years. And, you know, this is no time for cuts.
Okay. And just to put it in perspective, gambling in casinos in the last 8 years, but and I'm going to come back to Chris Sears here for a second. In the last year, with sports betting and then online sports betting, Chris, is it safe to say that we've seen an exponential increase over that in the people who now have access to gamble in the Commonwealth?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen just in the past year, you know, the amount that's been wagered on these online sports betting platforms is nearly $5 billion. And it's not just the amount of money that's being wagered. It's also, you know, the nature of these sports betting platforms, they're now available on your phone. They're essentially in your back pocket. They're reachable at 2 a.m. You know, we're hearing reports from mental health therapists all over the state, as well as local Gamblers Anonymous groups, that more and more adolescents and teenagers are showing up at their offices seeking help. And so it has been a year. It does seem to make sense to sort of step back and say, okay, well, what has been the impact of this? And we've got a lot of smart people in our state. Marlene is one of them, who have been looking at this problem for years, and we should assess, well, what's been the impact of all this, and especially on vulnerable populations, young people, college students, recent immigrants, people who are in recovery, who are being bombarded every single day, whether they're on the T or whether they're watching sports events, by this constant stream of advertising. And it just seems like it cutting back on the Public Health Trust Fund, which funded so much of this critical research at UMass Amherst and elsewhere, does seem, I'm sort of surprised that the Healey administration did this. And I do wonder if they talked to groups like Marlene's.
Okay, so that's where we are. What caught our attention was this move by the Healey administration in its budget proposal to cut a stream of funding to the Public Health Trust Fund that looks at gambling addiction and supports addiction services. We have with us Chris Sears of the Boston Globe, Marlene Warner of the Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health. We also have Evan Horowitz of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts, and Jay Zagorski, who's an economics professor at BU. I want to talk numbers. I want to get a sense of the order of magnitude now for just a minute. And Evan Horowitz, I'll start with you. You know, we have this $5 billion number. Tell us about that. How big is sports betting and betting? And does the difference matter, or are we just talking about a rounding error in the difference between the two now in the Commonwealth?
Between sports betting and betting?
Yeah.
No, I mean, these are big numbers. It's a lot of economic activity. I think the number to focus on for this kind of story is the tax dollars, right? Because that's really what's at stake here. Are we cutting money? Are we cutting? That's a budgetary question. And there, I think you should think sort of $400 to $500 million
comes to the state.
Coming to the
state. From betting overall.
Correct. And, you know, that's a big number. It's not a decisive number in a budget that's $50 to $60 billion. But it's a meaningful number, and the state has become more reliant on these tax dollars over time. You know, this is a kind of multi-decade process where the state has said, taxing is hard. People don't like to pay taxes. What are other ways we can raise money? And lots of states moved to a lottery. That was sort of the first kind of state effort to raise money from gambling. And then they've moved into other gambling efforts through casinos and online betting. And it, you know, it's been a way for states to raise money, including Massachusetts, that doesn't involve taxing people, but it creates these sort of difficult externality problems where you end up driving people into dangerous habits and getting certain people addicted to it. And so the state is sort of complicit in this, but also it's become like a very comfortable way for them to get money to pay for programs that they care about without having to raise taxes.
And there are 36 states around the country that have become comfortable with these kinds of tax revenues?
I mean, I think it's more than that if you count the lottery, but yeah, most states have made this decision. They've said, you know what, this is a fine way to do it. And there's a good public policy rationale for it, too, which is people like to gamble. Right? Forget the problem gamblers. I'm a guy who likes to gamble in moderation. People enjoy gambling. And it's better for those people to be able to gamble with the state than with crime syndicates. And for a long time, that was your choice. Like, if you want to gamble, you're going to gamble with crime syndicates. And if you can't pay, you don't go into debt, you lose, you know, you get your legs broken or something. That's a terrible. So there was also a public policy rationale that said, you know what, the state can do this more responsibly. Let's do it responsibly. But, you know, there are limits to that. There are limits to that.
All right. So I want to bring in Jay Zagorski now. And Evan said, hey, I really want to focus on the tax revenues, but I do want to get these orders of magnitude in as well, Jay Zagorski. My understanding is, according to the LendingTree website, that in 2021, state lottery sales, the lottery started in 1972 here in Massachusetts, were, you know, almost $7 billion. And you're looking at $5 or $6 billion in sports betting. Are those big, big numbers? Should we look at them significantly?
Let me say one quick answer for your question is that just from online sports betting and casino sports betting, just the sports betting, we're picking up about $15 in tax revenue per man, woman, and child here in the Commonwealth. But there's a bigger picture here. Society has always had sin taxes. But after adjusting for inflation, a lot of these sin taxes have not been going up. People are smoking a lot less. So the inflation-adjusted amount states have gotten from tobacco taxes has actually been falling. People aren't drinking as much. So the inflation adjusted after alcohol. And the lottery sales, they took off, as you mentioned, in the 70s and 80s, but they're starting to flatline themselves. So states now need to look for other sources of revenue, as some of the other speakers have said. And what's the new source of revenue? Gambling, and in particular, sports gambling, because sports gambling can be done in the privacy of your own home. You don't have to physically go to a casino to play blackjack.
And the idea that we are seeing more people participate over time, do we know? Is this an accelerating participation model, Jay Zagorski? Do you understand? I don't know if that's like a thing that's only in my head, or is that a thing, Jay Zagorski?
The amount of money being bet nationwide has been rapidly accelerating. I made some estimates back in 2018 when the Supreme Court said it was okay to do sports betting, and it's been taking off not exponentially, but almost exponentially. So sports betting is done pretty much across the country. Now in 38 states it's legal, and it's been going up rather rapidly. Only in a few places, like Rhode Island, which was one of the earliest states to legalize sports betting, are we actually seeing things starting to level off.
Okay, so here's what we have so far then, right? We now know about the money, and we know about the move on addiction services, and we know about the tax revenues, and we know about the drop-off in sin taxes, not sin tax like S-Y-N-T-A, but sin taxes on sinful things. And we know about what the size of the industry is, and we know about the acceleration. So that's kind of the landscape that we're dealing with in. And now I really want to start diving into the tensions, right? The pushes and pulls of all of this. And just to remind listeners, we've got Chris Sears of the Boston Globe, who's an addiction reporter there. We've got Marlene Warner of the Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health. We've got Evan Horowitz of Tufts University and Jay Zagorski of the Questrom School of Business at BU. And I want to come back to the addiction and ethics pieces. So I'll come to you, Marlene. One of the things that Evan laid out is one of the things that legalization does is bring this into an area that can be regulated, right? You're not betting. If you're going to bet, you're not betting sort of with a bookie, right? You're not betting in an illegal environment. You may be more able to receive treatment and support. What do we know about the treatment and support infrastructure in the Commonwealth?
So I think one of the things that's important to know is Massachusetts leads in the United States. We have so many other, first of all, our funding sources are far and beyond any other state. We have prevention and treatment really being covered by the Department of Public Health at the direction of the Executive Office of Health and Human Services out of the Office of Problem Gambling Services. And then we have research of responsible gambling happening at the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. All of that came to be in that 2011 Expanded Gaming Act and has been continued throughout. I think the other key piece is that, you know, public health is at the forefront of these services. And I'd say that, you know, it's not just a lot of states are just making sure that there's a helpline being covered. I think that the advertising conversations, the conversations about what should be happening on site at the casinos, we have these on site centers at the three casinos. Those are helping people in ways that we are measuring and are seeing just tremendous results with. So there's very good infrastructure here, Massachusetts, as it relates to casinos and sports betting. You mentioned the lottery, and I think we have a little bit of a ways to go there.
So, Chris Sears, I'm going to play a little bit of sound for you. Last year, Radio Boston spoke with Harry Levant, who's a gambling counselor and recovering gambling addict. And this is him describing how his addiction affected his life.
It harmed my children. It harmed my, I was a lawyer. It harmed my clients. I stole money from anyone, anything I could get my hands on because gambling addiction is not about money. It's about the way the product makes you feel.
And then he went on to talk about when he realized that he needed to stop betting.
When I was trying to write a suicide note to explain to my children that which could never actually be explained, it's difficult to put into words exactly how unwell I was at that time.
And I'm going to note for listeners, if you or someone you love is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can text or call 988 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's a mental health crisis hotline. Chris, in your reporting, are we seeing an increase in reported instances of addiction or more vulnerable people at risk of addiction? What do we know, and what are the open question marks?
Well, first, thank you for playing that recording from Harry Levant. I have spoken to Harry, and I think his story is very powerful. And I don't think you hear as many stories about gambling addiction as we do about alcohol and opioid addictions, for instance. And but, you know, I do wonder if the Healey administration had taken any time to reach out to any groups that actually provide treatment and therapy for people who are struggling with this, because, you know, it really does rupture friendships. People lose their jobs. They end up homeless. It contributes to domestic violence. There have been reports put together by, for instance, the Boston Chinatown Neighborhood Center looking at the impact on the Asian immigrant community. And in many cases, it's quite devastating. And so I don't really think we fully understand the prevalence of the problem. And I do wonder to what extent there had been any conversations with any of these groups across the state before they went ahead and made this decision to cut funding for problem gambling and research. And it is true that Massachusetts spends more per capita on problem gambling services than just about any other state. I think Oregon's the only state that exceeds us. But still, here we are. I don't think we have a full, authentic sense of the scope of the problem a year into the advent of online gambling. The other thing I just want to point out is, you know, about a decade ago, some really smart researchers looked at, you know, the addictive nature of slot machines, and basically found that slot machines were, you know, 3 to 4 times more addictive than card games. And if you can imagine the nature of these online sports betting platforms on your phone, where you can make hundreds of bets per game, you know, you can bet on everything from the speed of the pitch to how many home runs a player is going to hit. And I think it behooves us to try to better understand to what extent that's impacted addiction across our state before we start cutting funding for essential services.
So I'll turn to you, Evan Horowitz, just about sort of the sausage-making process when the governor's administration creates a budget. Is there consultation? Is it not at that stage? Talk a little more about that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you turn to me because you see me shaking my head in studio. There's definitely consultation, and I don't think it's fair to suggest that the Healey administration either doesn't understand or appreciate what the impact of cuts would be, precisely because this is not a cut or not yet a cut, right? And I think you have to understand the budget dynamics of what's actually going on here. There is a savings fund. Think of it as a savings account that we use to pay out for addiction programs. And so money comes in through the taxes, some portion of that gets put in the savings account, which builds up over time, and then we pay out of the savings account. And what they're saying is, you know what, we have enough in the savings account right now to cover services for a while. Let's just not put as much in the savings account this year. We'll put it to something else that is needed, but we don't think that's going to lead to any cuts in programs. That's very different from saying, let's cut programs, right? So I don't think it's really fair to call this a cut. You could say it might lead to cuts down the road. You know, there are dynamics to worry about.
And often when you move money, it never gets moved back.
But that's just the public policy priority, right? So the broader picture is things are going to get cut. We don't have enough money for everything. So let's say we did fill that up. Then there'd be some other group saying, well, we didn't get enough for early education. We didn't get enough for this. Like, they have hard choices to make. And one way that they thought to address these hard choices is to say, let's not cut now. Let's kick the can a little bit. We'll just not put as much in the savings account. And hopefully things will be better next year. We'll fill it up again and have the money. Then there will never be cuts. That is a reasonable public policy decision. And it can be made, you know, with a full understanding of the challenges of addiction.
Still lots to talk about. There's one more question that I want to get in before we take a pause in our conversation. And this goes to Jay Zagorski. It's one last piece I want to understand. I understand we're in the middle of a debate. One last piece I want to understand here. Jay Zagorski, as we've been talking about this, is there sort of some kind of ratio of what's the word? Externality, right? Where the gambling is worse than or better than. You know, it's a pleasurable activity and creates revenue, but also creates negative byproducts that hurt people and have cost. And we know that it is X versus something else. You know, skiing is that is Y. Do you understand what I'm asking you?
I understand. I don't think there actually is a ratio, but let me take a little bit of a controversial stand here compared to your other listeners. Massachusetts has its own gambling hotline, but there's also a national gambling hotline. Massachusetts has its own research, but there's also national research. I'm a little confused as an economist why Massachusetts has to replicate things and why many of these states are all replicating things. Why instead of not just pooling all the money and having everybody have the same 1-800 number, have the same website, have the same national survey to understand the problems of gambling, and then broken down by state or local area jurisdictions. I think we could save money and actually produce just as many services. But I think many of your guests will find this controversial.
You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tisiana Deering, and we are looking at money, gambling, and the Commonwealth, how much the state relies on gambling revenues, how much we don't know about addiction yet in the young sports betting industry, what services we have, all of it. Still with us, Chris Sears of the Boston Globe, Evan Horitz of Tufts University, Marlene Warner of the Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health, and Jay Zagorski, who's an economics professor at BU's Questrom School of Business. And we got a little tension on the table. A couple of things. Just before we took a pause, Jay Zagorski proposed a consolidation in the hotline and some of our addiction services. Chris Sears had criticized the Healey administration for cutting money that goes into a savings account for addiction services. Evan Horowitz had said it's not really a cut. It's enough in the savings account. So we got all kinds of opinions on the table here. What is in common is looking at what we should be doing right now. All right. So since three people have said controversial things and Marlene's just sitting there, Marlene gets to go first now to either respond or take the next step in. No, this is what we should be doing.
So I appreciate what Jay said, and he's right. I do take issue with it. And the reason for that is because the Massachusetts...
Hang on. Jay is the one who said we should consolidate some services and hotline. Go ahead.
That's right. So the helpline number does route together. They're all the same number. So when somebody calls 1-800-GAMBLER, which is the national helpline, that gets routed to Massachusetts. So they all are one helpline. So check, right? That box is checked. The idea of services would be lovely. There's currently something called the GRIT Act that is they're trying to find sponsors for on the national level, but not a single penny of all the, and I'm sure Evan could speak more to this, but you know, on the national level, there's all this gambling revenue that comes in from taxes on gambling, but not a single penny is spent on the national government, so federal government. We'd love for that to happen, but that's not currently happening. So it's left up to the 48 states that have legalized gambling across the U.S. to figure it out. Massachusetts just happens to do it a little bit better. And P.S., this number in terms of that's been dedicated to services and the services themselves expanded because the Massachusetts state legislature took about 15 years to decide to legalize casino betting here in Massachusetts. And so the appeal for the legislature to do that grew as more services were offered. We are a state that cares about our people. The legislature cared about the people and those that were going to be impacted. We knew we already had people gambling. We wanted to make sure that this additional access was not going to cause additional problems. And again, we will find that out very soon when the Massachusetts Gaming Commission results from those studies come out. I would say that we also are a little bit different. We know that we also have to take care of people. So New Hampshire and Rhode Island both have 18 as the gambling age. Here in Massachusetts, it's 21. We have a lot of kids who are going across the border to gamble in these other places, but bringing their problems home. That requires additional services and education and information. So I think there's a lot for us to pay attention to, and I'd love to consolidate services. That's not in the realm of possibility right now.
GRIT being the Gambling Addiction Recovery Investment and Treatment Act,
yes.
Which would set aside half of the federal sports excise tax revenue to fund programs for gambling addiction prevention, treatment, and research. So, Evan, Marlene said maybe you do know. more about federal level money, do you?
No. I will say one of the challenges with getting states to coordinate is you need an actor to do it, and the federal government is the right actor to do it, but the federal government is not playing that role. So short of that, you have to like make calls and hold meetings between 48 states to agree on that is very difficult. It's much easier for the state to say, no, we believe in this, we want to do it. Having said that, I appreciate the optimism about, you know, this Massachusetts is a state that really cares about its people, and it seems to me Massachusetts is a state that hasn't decided how much it cares about its people on this issue relative to the revenue it's generating. And that's the problem we have. Like, it just doesn't know exactly how to balance these things.
To that point, and I'm glad you said that, I'm going to bring in a little sound here from Les Bernal, who's the national director of the nonprofit group Stop Predatory Gambling. This is from Radio Boston last year, him making the case that the Massachusetts lottery preys on the poor.
I'm from Lawrence. They're selling $50 lottery scratch tickets at check cashing stores in the poorest community in the state. So the idea that somehow this is regulated to protect people, that they've been talking about responsible gambling for 40 years, it's a con.
Chris Sears, one of the things that struck us as we were doing our homework to get ready for this conversation was some information about the lottery. So I'd already brought up the $6.7 billion in 2021 state lottery sales. But the other thing that struck us about that was that in Massachusetts, per capita spending, according to the LendingTree website, on the lottery is about $1,000 per person, or was in 2021. And that is three times the amount by the average state across. So Massachusetts is way out of whack on lottery spending. What else do we know there? Is that something that you have followed in your beat?
You know, I haven't followed the lottery spending maybe as closely as I should. I do think it's interesting that, you know, in the same budget that the Healey administration is proposing a cut in the Public Health Trust Fund for problem gambling services and research, they're proposing, you know, roughly doubling the amount of advertising on the lottery. And to be clear, you know, I do think it's it is a cut in services to reduce by half the amount of money you're allocating to the Public Health Trust Fund. I you know, maybe I'm thinking of this too simplistically, but you know, if I cut by half the amount of money I'm putting in my 401k, you know, I'm going to pay for that eventually down the line. And so to claim that this is not a cut in services, I think is disingenuous. I do think that, you know, it's important to note that we really don't know the full scope of this. And I, you know, if I had a message, I would just say that there is a time to better understand, you know, the scope of the problem, the prevalence of problem gambling. And sitting here today, I don't think we know that. I don't think we know the impact of the advertising onslaught that has occurred over the past year, the impact on kids in particular. And I just think that, you know, that fund was one of the crucial tools for better understanding that. And so I worry about this, and a lot of therapists and service providers are across the state are worried that we're sowing the seeds of a future addiction crisis if we don't get our arms around it.
So I'll come to Jay Zagorski here. Jay, a couple of things. One of the references that Les Bernal was making there was to the move last year by the Healey administration to create a $50 scratch tickets being a common approach in lotteries. Many other states are surrounding states. The highest, the biggest one is a $20 or a $30. We have a $50. And I wonder that coupled with points that you've made in the past about the way some of our betting works here, which is you can do, for example, online sports betting with a credit card, which is less friction than other areas. You cannot use a credit
card
here.
Debit card only.
Thank you.
Yes.
Should we be concerned that we're making it too easy to bet too big, too fast, too often? Jay Zagorski.
And this is something that I'm very concerned about. Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire do not allow you to bet with a credit card. But most of the other 38 states do. If you have a credit card, you can bet well over your head. You can bet whatever your credit line is. And not only that, when you're betting with your credit card, it's considered a cash advance, which means interest rate charges start immediately upon making that bet, whether you win or lose. But I think you've been talking about the lottery, and I think Massachusetts has something to learn from the lottery. Right now in Massachusetts, if you wanted to go in and buy that scratch ticket, you pretty much have to pay cash. There's a couple of ways in the Massachusetts lottery that you can use a credit card or a debit card, for example, buying a season ticket. But in general, if I want to bet on the lottery, I have to pay cash, and that adds some friction. And right now, we have basically a frictionless system. You can sit on your couch in the middle of a basketball game during March Madness and go bet, until you've bet well over your head. And I'm advocating that people should need to pre-fund their betting apps with cash. And that causes, when you're out of money, you actually have to physically get up, go to an ATM, get some money, and then add that to your account. And gives you a moment to think, am I getting in over my head here?
So, Evan Horowitz, I'm going to come back to you because we're constantly talking about the tension, right? So that's on the addiction side, the tension being on the revenue side and what the state wants and needs. Will there be attention to those things, or are the pressures to collect tax revenues so great that there are structural disincentives to slowing down how people can participate in gambling?
Totally. And I think the flip way to put it is that the reason we have trouble credibly addressing gambling addiction is because the state is addicted to gambling revenue, right? That's the flip way to put it, and not wrong way to put it. And that is not going to change. You do hear on the lottery. So there have been some talk how critical we should be of the Healey administration. I was defending the administration. But there's another side to this. The administration is pushing for online lottery sales, right? That's a good reason, I think, to be critical on these fronts. That's going to make the lottery more seamless, increase addiction issues there. So there's a whole other side to this where the state really is torn on these issues. At the consensus revenue hearing, the Treasurer Goldberg testifies, and she oversees the lottery. And she was arguing not only for online lottery, but for 10 to 100 times as much money for lottery advertising. Like just a massive, order of magnitude increase. The state feels that this is still an easy way to get money. And I think that impulse overrides the concern about addiction problems.
All right. So sort of lightning round last question for each person. A thing that you would like to see happen next, Marlene Warner of the Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health.
I would like to make sure we keep funding where it is or increase it, and not bring on new types of gambling right now while we're still trying to figure out what we are currently doing in terms of sports wagering and casinos, and also releasing transactional data. That's a whole other topic we didn't get a chance to talk about, so that we really know what's going on behind the scenes and not just react to the revenue dollars.
All right. And Chris Sears, a thing you'd like to see happen next?
Boy, I would like to see, more research the impact of the advent of online sports gambling. I do think that we need to better understand the tools themselves, including the impact of the advertising onslaught. And I would like to see more publicity around groups like Gamblers Anonymous and the state helpline, 1-800-327-5050.
Okay, Jay Zagorski?
I would love to be able to ban both credit and debit card funding of gambling apps, force everyone to use cash.
All right, and Evan Horowitz.
Well, I'm going to endorse that call, which I've not heard about pre-funding. I think that would make a huge difference in terms of people's willingness to play. It really empowers moderate gamblers and creates some friction for addiction.
All right. Evan Horowitz is of Tufts University, the Center for State Policy Analysis there. Jay Zagorski is an economics professor at BU's Questrom School of Business. Marlene Warner is CEO of Massachusetts Council on Gaming and Health. And Chris Sears is an addiction reporter with the Boston Globe. Thanks to all four of you for being with us.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.